previously.tv podcast network.
Black lives are degraded without regard, and we in here watching TV.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 154 for the week of May 1st, 2017. I am Scandalous Parody David T. Cole, and I'm here with fellatio-related cliffhanger Sarah D. Bunting. Summer Bay, Tara Ariano.
My parents are out.
And student body presidential candidate Kim Reed.
Woke, not woke.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Extra Hot Great. Before we get started, I just want to have a little programming chat with you, our dear listeners. Next week, we will be off because I have to fly to a different island for medical tests. How stupid is that?
It's not the island you think either. So we're going to fill with extra stuff like we do on our weeks off now, but there will not be a big new episode until the following Wednesday, which will be the 17th of May.
All right. On with the show.
And this week's show has us joined once again by Kim Reed. Hello again, Kim.
Hello.
Where is it?
Yeah!
Come on, thank you.
Tweeting too.
I was like, the minute I start talking, there it'll be. This week we are discussing Dear White People, the new series from Netflix. It picks up where the 2014 movie left off, in case you're not familiar, and I was not, because I am absolutely the white people to whom everything is addressed in this work product. The film focuses on escalating racial tensions at a prestigious Ivy League college from the perspective of several African-American students. So first, I'd like to ask if anyone else on the panel watched the movie.
Yeah, I saw the movie. I saw
it. I did not.
Any,
in the theater.
Okay. Tara, any thoughts on the differences or the evolution? It picks up where the movie leaves off. I mean,
yeah.
Do you feel like we're missing anything by not having seen the movie?
No, the movie is good, but I mean, the show is a very strong adaptation, and which is not surprising. It was done by the same guy, Justin Simien, who wrote and directed the film. He's also very involved in the show. He wrote and directed at least the pilot, and I believe a few other episodes too. But yeah, the movie is worth seeing, if only because they have bigger actors playing the same parts that are in this show. I mean, I think the casting is good too, although the guy who plays Troy is in the movie also playing the same part. But the Chris from Everybody Hates Chris is Lionel in the movie, and Tessa Thompson from Creed is Sam. And I forget who the dean is. I don't think it's Oba Babatunde. But yeah, I thought the choice to pick it up right after the movie was smart, because it sort of it you know, let them build on what they had already established at the same time telling a new story, or you know, showing how that story continued. But I also felt like the elliptical nature of at least those first three episodes, where we're sort of rehashing the same ground from different characters' perspectives, is an interesting idea that I think works better later in the season. I sort of felt like those first few episodes were a bit flabby because we were just walking over the same ground. And Kim, I saw you tweet that you thought it really kind of clicked only once we got to the Coco episode, which I think is episode 4.
Yeah, that's correct.
I would agree.
Yeah, I thought it's interesting that you say they, you know, showed the same event from different perspectives. Obviously it did, but that wasn't really what was bothering me about the first few episodes. It was more, I was interested in the content and in the point of view, but the acting and the dialogue didn't really click for me. It kind of felt like they had all these words to say and all these kind of speeches to give. Mm-hmm. And it kind of felt like homework for those first three episodes. And so I was watching it, and I probably would have watched it even if we weren't going to discuss it on the podcast. But I kind of thought, I don't know if I want to keep watching this. Like, how many episodes of this do I have to watch to, you know, keep my liberal credentials, I guess? And because, you know, I mean,
I get it.
I like to think that I try to stay aware and on top of the issues. And it wasn't telling me anything I didn't already know, for at least in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But then when that fourth episode, which is told from the point of view of Coco, something clicked, and I haven't been able to quite put my finger on what it was, but I was hooked. You know, I think it was a much more complex, she's a much more complex character, or the first time we get to see the complexity mm-hmm. of one of the characters. And it clicked, and I was hooked, and I binge watched the entire rest of the series up until I only saw like the first few minutes of the very last episode because I fell asleep. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning at that point. Uh-huh. And I still haven't finished it. But so I would advise people, if you're thinking about watching it, try to stick with it at least through that many episodes to see if you have the same experience.
Yeah. I did end up watching to the end. The last episode is, I think, told from her perspective again, or there's another one that's, did you stay awake long enough to know that? I think the last one is from,
there is another one from her perspective later. I can't remember if it's the last one or it's close to the end.
Right. And I think that both of those are probably my favorite episodes of the season. And for the reason that you said, it fleshes out her character and lets us know a little bit more about where she's coming from and why she's coming at the issues from sort of a different angle than Sam is, our protagonist. Sarah, how many did you watch? I know you're not a sitcom person.
I'm not, but I had also picked up from social media before I started watching this that you really had to kind of just kind of get through mm-hmm. the first three, because it was like sort of, you know, moving the boats into formation. I have watched four. I'm definitely going to watch the rest, but I absolutely agree that that's when the show kind of feels like we're situated finally, and it's just going to be what it is. It's too bad that it takes that long, but I also feel like this was definitely a thing in reviews that was like, hang in there until after the first third. But yeah, I mean, certainly there were some moments in there that, like, having attended the least woke, prestigious Ivy League university on Earth, it was like, not a lot has changed in the, you know, asshattery that goes on. But so I don't know, that was interesting, but I'm not really current on how college kids are thinking and feeling. Kim, you teach at a college. Are you, deepen the experience or make it more annoying for you?
No, I teach at like a commuter school, so it's a lot different setting. But I did have, it's interesting that you say that, because I did have that same feeling of, you know, we all went to college in the 90s, early 90s. And
how dare you?
Okay, Sarah and I went in the early 90s. And
I did too.
I was thinking, this feels like what it felt like on my campus when I went to college. I went to a small liberal arts school, Catholic Jesuit school, and there was not a huge population of people of color, although larger than the one in my high school by, you know, percentage. And the issues that they were facing felt a lot like the ones I remember hearing about when I was in college, mumble years ago, many years ago, let's just say. And so I was interested, I would like to seek out and read some reviews or perspectives from people who have been in college more recently to see if it reflects their experiences, because I'm thinking this feels like it was written by somebody my age, and I don't know the age of the creator of the show, but it felt like, you know, a Spike Lee joint, you know, school days or something like that. A lot of the issues, and it's probably just the case, like you said, Sarah, that not a lot has changed. Unfortunately, there hasn't been much progress made. So I had that same thought.
He's in his mid-30s for the record. He was born in 1983.
I'm glad to hear that it kind of gather steam a little bit later on, because I found the first episode to be really on the nose, and I think it's partly because of the structure, the whole DJ at a radio station thing, I think lends itself to very speechy bits, and I kind of got a little bit of whiplash in those points, and I thought just the points that were made then, although important, were like very, very on the nose.
Yeah, I mean, that part of it didn't bother me. It was more like the, you know, I understand that this is sort of like the, you know, foundation aspect of this.
Yeah, it's not being character. A dick 101. I get that part of it.
Right.
But it's also a little bit like, that is very shortcutty. And like,
yes,
it's not like Chris in the Morning, but it's sort of like, you know, there are ways to, And I also didn't sometimes buy that she, I don't know, that she was inconsistently insecure at times. But I also spent a lot of the first three episodes, I am sorry to say, well, actually, I'm not that sorry to say, sourcing some of the fashion and accessories, sure, because everyone looks great in the first three episodes, certainly. Like, if you're sort of waiting for it to click in the way you've read that it's going to, then
yeah, I mean,
there's worse things to do than look on Etsy for Sam's jewelry.
Yeah, and I understand the position that perhaps the show's in, that like these are things that for one audience are like, okay, can we get to something that is a little more nuanced that I may not know? Is it preaching to the choir, or, you know, is it trying to educate? And if it is trying to educate, you know, is it basically saying that, you know, we missed these people before they got to university? How do we get them now that they're here?
Yeah, I guess. But I also think, like, since there are already idiots that even before the show premiered, like, as soon as it was announced, was like, calling a show Dear White People, that's racist, but, where it's like, no.
Yeah, and I don't mean this.
No.
I don't want to say that that's, like, a bad approach. I mean, I think they had to come in with a cudgel on this and yes, say, like, what's going on right now is bad. Bang, 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 bang.
Right.
Like, here are some, you know, egregious examples of what's going on in our college system.
No, but I see what you're saying, Dave, that it's like, would the people that you're trying to reach with that,
yes,
even be watching this?
And yeah, like, yeah.
And that's, that it's reverse racism, like, whatever.
If so, I may make a terrible comparison.
Oh, God, here we go.
To the M. Night Shyamalan movie Unbreakable. The problem with that movie to me wasn't that it was a bad movie. You may disagree, but just hear me out in this one. It was that for the people that it could have marketed to in advance, comic book people, it had to hide that it was a comic book story from those people, because that was the M. Night Shyamalan sell twist at the end, right? Mm-hmm. That it was an origin story about a comic book character. And then for everybody else that went into it wanting the seventh sense, it wasn't that, right? So it didn't satisfy either party there. And I feel like the pilot episode of the series kind of was that. Like, it wanted to speak to both sides of it, but really in a unsatisfying or completely, you know, not satisfying way to either one of those. And I, you know, like, they're never going to get the people that are dismissing
that
it because
racist
of the title.
Yes. No, I think someone who's smarter than me could probably explain why you would need those first few. Really, guy who's in an Inside Out hoodie right now? Because, by the way, you are. that you need to have, that those first episodes sort of need to bridge, like, from the structure of a movie to a structure of a show, where there's, like, a movie is a closed story and a show is an open-ended story, that, you know, you have to sort of, you have to make a transition in the early going, because as we say, like, when you get further into it, they can get more into the more subtle details of things that, like, even people who are students of color at college right now aren't necessarily talking about, like in this this Coco episode that we were talking about, where they get into colorism, which is something I honestly do not see discussed on television or in pop culture at all, except on Catfish, which let's just say is not necessarily the most nuanced doesn't take the best approach to that topic, but that is still important, and that's something that's buried, I think, in the community.
So the show starts broad.
I think it does.
And gets,
I think that's fair to say,
gets narrower.
Right? Yeah.
Well, I have something that you guys have made me think about in terms of the audience. I was just thinking about, like, I have a nephew who's 15, and he and many of his friends, dear fellow old people, let me tell you about what the youngs are up to these days. They watch Netflix. That's all they watch. They don't watch network television at all. If I want to discuss a show, it has to be with him. It has to be streaming on Netflix. I think I mentioned last year he had just discovered Friends. It was the best day of my life. We had a trivia contest. I won. Anyway. Awesome. So I'm thinking of a kid like him, who he lives in a rural, super white community, he's middle class, lots of privilege. But he might watch a show like this on Netflix because he's heard about it, or it just shows up on his screen, or for whatever reason. And he probably would need that sort of broad cudgel approach mm-hmm. in the first few episodes, because he's not on Twitter. He hasn't been exposed to these ideas before,
yeah.
I would imagine. And there's lots of kids out there like him. And so, you know, maybe that's part of who the audience is. It's not the people who are commenting on the YouTube trailer and saying, this is racist. You're not going to win those people over. They're idiots, right?
Yes.
And it's not necessarily people like us who are probably going to watch it anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it's there's maybe a third option out there that just made me think of it. And I also just wanted to add, for people who haven't watched it yet and are listening to this discussion,
it is.
I don't want, we're talking yes. about the serious issues, which it does address, but it's also really funny. So yeah. I don't want you to get discouraged, like, oh, sounds terrible. I like comedies.
I want to play a clip in a second, but you're totally right on, like, there being other you know, demos for this. And certainly that this show exists and stuff like when you get to university, suddenly that's the time when you learn about consent mm-hmm. for a lot right. of these people is like a failing. And it's a challenge for that show to do so much in a first episode.
Yeah. But I think what the show does well and that the movie did well too was that also setting it at a college like this, which is like a Harvard type of place, where there's sort of a certain segment of the population of that campus would think, well, we're all egalitarian because we all got here on our merits. And that what I think the show and movie both did well was complicate that idea of like people, even if they are very high achievers, are coming from all different kinds of classes and bring different experiences with them that are not always, you know, acknowledged or honored in an environment like that, where the, you know, the idea behind it is that it's a utopia of shared ideas where like, yes, but also no.
Yeah. So should we talk about defamation?
Yes, I was waiting to get okay. around that because I was so glad that got in the first episode, not knowing how many Kim was going to watch since she also covers Scandal for us.
Yes. All right. So here's a clip from the in-universe version of Scandal known as defamation.
But I'm in love with you. Tell him. Kim.
You are the leader of the free world. You don't get to fall in love.
And what about you?
I'm in love with my job, which is to get little bitch babies like you to act like grown-ass men when the world needs them to do their job.
That's my girl. Because
she got to say something, right?
Well, I've got a job for you. Blow me. Right here. In the Oval Office. I'm that eagle.
Yes, Mr. President. I pledge allegiance to your cause. Wow. Daddy?
That was pretty well done.
That was amazingly well done. Even the delivery was so Kerry Washington. Loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it is. The show is pretty funny, and you know, we kind of got lost in the discussion, but yeah, there's definitely laughs to be had.
Yes.
Yeah.
The voiceover is also really good and well done too. It's Giancarlo Esposito, and he has this total like Ron Howard moment, I think, in the first episode. I wonder if they'll find this amusing. They do not. It's just so good. Kind of want that to be a ringtone.
But on the TV parody tip too, in a later episode, there's a Yanla Fix My Life spoof too that's really very well done too. Her name is like Dereka or something. She's like, as a blah, 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 lists all the jobs she's had, including person who's read half of one of Yanla's books. So that was also very
Any final thoughts before we move on Dear White People?
No, it goes by very fast. There's only 10 episodes in the first season. They're each around a half an hour. So I think it's very much worth watching. I enjoyed it very much.
And it sounds like the consensus is stick with it until at least the fourth episode so you can get a taste of sort of the back half, right?
I think that is fair to say.
All right.
Yeah, agreed.
Agree.
All right, it is time to go around the dial. Everybody brings something from the world of television to the table, and we're starting with Tara.
I just wanted to talk about Brooklyn Nine-Nine, this week's episode, which, as we're recording this, airs tonight, but by the time you listen to this, will have aired last night. The episode is called Moo Moo, and for a show like Brooklyn Nine-Nine that started, it's currently in its fourth season, so it started, you know, a number of years ago, and has... has the bad luck of being a cop comedy in a time when cops are not always very well regarded or in some instances doing things that they ought racially. And so it's, you know, it's dicey for a show like this to sort of, you know, deal with racist cops, but this episode does it, tying in nicely with our lead topic. Actually, what happens is that Terry is out looking for one of his daughter's blankies and he gets stopped and harassed by a white cop who doesn't think he should be in the neighborhood. And so it turns into a debate sort of between Terry and Holt of how he should react, if he should file a report because he's up for this, for a promotion that would be like a liaison city hall job, if he should rock the boat or if he should just let it go for the sake of his career prospects. And they have a really like nuanced, but again, also funny, but yeah, also serious conversation about like, what is the right way to react in a situation like this? Should you seek, you know, redress through proper channels, or should you try to rise yourself so that, as Holt has, and this has been a theme throughout the series, you know, be an example for other people that might be in your, that might come after you, you know, other black gay cops that would be, would benefit from you, you know, getting promoted and meritocratic grounds and so on. Anyway, they both sides of the debate get a strong hearing, I thought, and yeah, it was handled nicely and subtly, and it was a very timely episode and a tough thing for that, for a show like that. So it's mostly pretty goofy to
handle. The show is mostly pretty goofy, but you will watch it and not get whiplash.
Yeah.
Which is
it conforms to the tone that the show has mm-hmm. established, but it also treats both of these characters and their differing positions, you know, seriously and honors them both, I thought.
I recently discovered that Terry Crews is like a crazy hardcore PC gamer. And I've been following, like, he's like, I think he puts about 10% of his earnings from that show into his computer. He like upgrades it like every other week into like whatever's the newest thing. And he's great. And apparently he's the internet at large has sort of unofficially petitioned the makers of Overwatch, which is like a first-person shooter, to make him one of the characters in the game.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it looks like it might be happening. Like, he's going to be perhaps either the voice of a new character that's coming down the pike.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So, anyways, I don't know. I thought that was super cute.
I know you said it was the newest thing, but I kind of enjoy picturing him playing, like, Myst.
Yeah.
Something really old school instead. Still, that's awesome.
Terry needs solutions.
Terry Crews is also a hardcore feminist who has experience being from a home with domestic violence and speaks out on those issues too. Is there anything he can't do? No.
We need to do an updated version of the Unhateables.
Yes.
Which we've done, haven't done in a couple years, which is like celebrities that are just like, if you can find a reason to hate this celebrity, then, you know, you are a terrible person. Right.
Yes. He also can't walk a red carpet without like leaping up in the air and making sure he gets photographed like above the ground. And
the man is, he's
amazing.
He's 20% muscle, 80% joy.
Yeah. Agree. Mm-hmm. And for my plug, I just want to mention that we are now over the hump. Of course, it's a very short season on Call the Midwives, just 8 episodes, but our podcast After Birth, on the previously.tv podcast network, just dropped episode 5. So we have 3 more episodes to go this season. Please join me and past and future Extra Hot Great guest Allison Lohuff as we break down every episode of Call the Midwife tearfully.
Oh, that was it.
End of plug.
All right, on to Kim Reed. Kim, what's your around the dial item?
Well, I haven't been watching much new television lately because it's just hard to keep up. So instead, I've been watching ER on Pop. I know Sarah has also been watching them because she's been doing the log lines article, which I read. And I just wanted to mention that this show really holds up. And this is probably my third time through the entire series. I watched it when they originally aired. And then I did a rewatch probably 10 or so years ago when they used to air on, I think, TNT.
Yep.
And now I'm watching them again. And I'd be interested to hear from someone who'd never seen the show if it holds up for them. Because I can never be quite sure if it's just nostalgia, like, oh, I remember the show. And as I watch each episode, certain ones I can remember, like, what was going on in my life at that time, where I was, or if it's the actual quality of the show. And keep in mind, they're still in the early seasons. Clooney's still on there, too. That is a good marker for you to figure out where they are in the run. The other difference is that often when I rewatch a show I haven't seen in many years, my perspective on the characters changes. Usually I start to relate to the parents in the show more than the kids in the show, for example. But things haven't changed with ER, except that I find Carter a lot more charming than I used to. I used to really dislike Carter. And this time around, for some reason, just the humor is what I'm noticing more. I never really noticed how funny the show is, Carter especially, and Benton and Carter together. So anyway, I'll be watching. And if you are too, feel free to tweet your thoughts at me.
And for your plug.
My plug is I am continuing with my podcast, Little House on Podcast. Woo! New episodes drop on Tuesday mornings each week, in which I recap an episode of Little House on the Prairie in my own style, which involves swearing sometimes. And asides and tangents and, you know, lots of stuff like that. And then I'm also covering on Previously.tv, Dancing with the Stars, and Scandal.
I've never watched a full episode of Little House on the Prairie, but I really enjoy the podcast. I've listened to every episode.
And thank you.
Which I prove each week by changing the Facebook photo to something about the episode, some stupid thing about the episode.
I am always surprised. I'm like, oh my God, he actually listened to it.
So it's really funny, Kim. And side plug, Sarah, you have an ER project going on the site.
Yes, I do. I'm trying to, it really is becoming that Lucy and Ethel at the Candy Factory thing, because Pop is seriously rerunning them like at a rate of 3 a day and 8 on the weekends.
What? So oh no.
We may have to go to the iTunes Plan B. But yes, I will be continuing to logline all 81,000 seasons of the show. And Kim's totally right. It really does hold up. And it's been very enjoyable to like look up the guest stars and also, frankly, to fast forward through subplots that I didn't care for the first time around.
Yeah, because you know, like, oh, this isn't going anywhere. I don't really have to pay attention to this part.
Yeah.
But Sarah, I really enjoyed in your log lines how you mentioned, instead, like, you called the characters by who they played in other projects and that sort of thing.
That's a Sarah. Because a lot of times I was like,
oh, yeah, that's who that was.
Totally.
And then there's Adam Scott, like, getting a central line, but having no lines, or that he's just like, ow. And then they cut away and it was like, oh, it's Adam Scott. Good times.
All right, Sarah, take it away.
I finally finished watching Bosch, the Amazon original based on the books. It dropped the 14th of April, but I was in the middle of the house move, and it took me a while to finish the third season, but I did it. I, like, had it on while I was wrapping dishes and whatnot. It's really such a good detective show. I didn't read the books, so my enjoyment of the show has nothing to do with how close or far away the adaptation of it is. It's in two things. First is just the pleasure of a satisfying mystery thriller confidently told. It's like Michael Clayton. It doesn't look like it's doing all that much, but you're totally sucked in and compelled by the performances and the writing. And the second thing is the tapestry of characters. The Buncey grand unifying principle of tertiary characters is the creamsicle principle. What makes a creamsicle delicious? It's not exactly the orange and it's not exactly the vanilla. It is the ability to maintain compelling tension between them so you keep eating it. Not every show can do this with its tertiary characters. Seinfeld, I mean, Kramer wasn't tertiary, but when it starts to play up other characters like twitchiness and bizarre side projects and starts to make them too much of a focal point and not part of the core, it doesn't work out as well. Bosch knows that we're interested in Lieutenant Grace Billets' tense relationship with her ex's new wife, who is her commander, and in the kooky doings of the detectives named Crate and Barrel, one of whom is played by the same guy who played Frank the desk clerk on ER. It's all Circle of Love. And Jerry's bafflement at his Randall-esque from This Is Us's son's science fair triumphs. I would totally watch a whole spinoff about the Edgar family, but we get just enough of all these different people and just enough of what's going on with their personal lives, and it doesn't overwhelm what's going on at the center of the story, which is a, I mean, it's a, you know, cop show. at the end of the day. So it's really good, and you should definitely make time for it in your Amazon Prime viewing life. And not for nothing. There's a jazz piano break at one point. It's used in an early season 3 episode to score a montage that included Bosch sadly regarding the dead body of a CI. It was so affecting that, listener, I downloaded some jazz.
What?
I know. That's some good shit right there. Speaking of jazz, I have another podcast called The Blotter Presents. It has a very jazzy theme song, and in upcoming episodes, I will be joined by my husband, Dan Patrick Brady, who once appeared on Unsolved Mysteries, Woo! And Kevin Smokler, author of Brad Pack America, who will be talking about his grand unifying theory of Unsolved Mysteries. So, download that on iTunes. That's Amazing. The Blotter Presents. And you can tweet at me at Blotter Presents.
It is time for the canon. Kim is doing the pitch this week. Kim.
Okay. Well, I'm continuing with my theme of just picking episodes of shows that I like to watch.
Prove.
And if you guys like it too, great. And if not, oh well. So it's sort of my version of the fourth thing. Just make you guys watch an episode of the show and talk about it. If it makes it in the canon, who cares? So I'm here to present Felicity, season 2, episode 22. Final Answer. Now, this was not the finale of season 2. It was the episode before the season finale. So just a quick note here that after watching this episode, I went on and watched the season 2 finale because I love the show. And I thought about submitting that one instead. The finale is a really funny episode. It features almost all of the main cast really well, but I felt that it was too plot driven and serialized and mainly there to set up the next season. But it's a good episode. You should totally watch it. Anyway, my primary reason for nominating this episode from this show is that Felicity is the perfect college show. It's the only show I've ever watched that was set in college that really captured the many feelings and situations of the traditional college experience. And this episode was, to me, one of the most college-y of them all. And in addition, this episode was the one that finally convinced me, the Noel truther, that Felicity and Ben were the OTP. So let's get rid of some subplots here. In this episode, a few things are happening, and they pretty much all have to do with sex. First, Ruby decides she should be with the father of her baby instead of Noel, and she leaves the show. Goodbye, Ruby. Next, we have the continuing adventures of Sean deciding that he's in love with Julie, except Noel eats too many of Megan's Smart cookies, and they have beet powder, and he's allergic to it. Callback to season 1. And he ends up kissing Julie. Sean walks in on them. Goodbye, Sean and Julie's relationship. Elena has just found out that her new boyfriend, Tracy, is committed to staying a virgin until marriage. But in this episode, Tracy's changed his mind. He thinks they should have sex, but Elena is the one who puts the brakes on things because she doesn't want to come between Tracy and his faith. So goodbye, Tracy and Elena's sex life. So now we get to Felicity and Ben. Backing up a bit, the entire first season was basically Felicity chasing Ben. She decided to attend the University of New York because Ben was going there. She creepily followed him around for most of the first season, even though Ben didn't show a whole lot of interest in her. So at the end of the first season, in the legendary cliffhanger, where we had to wait a whole summer, kids, ask your parents, to figure out if Felicity was going to choose Ben or Noel, I was honestly rooting for Noel at the time, because at least Noel seemed to like Felicity. But as we all know, she chose Ben, and the second season started to convince me that maybe Felicity and Ben were a good idea. In the episode prior to this one, Ben finally realizes this too, makes a super romantic gesture, one of my favorite scenes from the entire series. He screens a copy of The Gold Rush to make up for a previous time that he stood Felicity up. And they watch the movie and the Sarah McLachlan song, Better Than Ice Cream, plays, and it's fantastic. After that, they spend the night together, and apparently their whole friend group shows up at Sean's loft the next morning to listen in outside Ben's bedroom door and try to figure out what's happening. And that's what we hear in our first clip.
You hear that? What? That. It sounds like sheets rustling.
I don't hear anything.
All I hear is your breathing. Are you about to have a heart attack?
What?
What's happening?
Oh, Felicity and Ben spent the night together.
Oh, my God.
I so wish we had a camera in there.
I know. You guys are like two creepy pornographers.
Come on.
Let me finish that I used to date.
Do you think they had sex? Oh, how great would that be? Oh, yeah.
Why would that be great?
Well, for our documentary. Yeah, for the soap line.
Oh, you guys are sick.
Shh. Felicity and Ben are inside.
Yeah, getting it on. Doing the nasty.
You guys are spying on them? That's disgusting. Are you sure they're in there?
No, that's why I meant this. This is a spy game. That way we can see inside the room.
Oh, bingo.
What? I see blankets.
He sees blankets.
Isn't this illegal?
Wait a minute. What do we got?
Ben. He's mooning us.
He's flashing us.
Yeah, she's flashing us.
That's my girl.
So it's kind of a long clip, but I wanted to have the whole thing because it's that thing where your entire friend group is all up in each other's business and feels entitled to be so. And it's something that I experienced in college. Also, everybody just being in the same place at the same time for no apparent reason really reminded me of college and something that doesn't really happen after that in your adult life.
What's the music rights situation with Felicity? Did it all port over?
No, hardly any. No.
I was going to say, because like, that sounded like that music was supposed to be that dun 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 song, you know?
Yeah, that Snuffy Walden. Yeah. I'm sure it was in the original.
Okay.
Yeah, nothing.
Good to know.
It's really disappointing. Anyway, so then we get to see Ben and Felicity hanging out in bed, dreaming of all the things they could do together before reality crashes in and they realize that none of these things are going to happen. And warning, this clip has a lot of smooching. That's our next clip.
You know, we should do that. We should get one of those courier tickets and just go somewhere nuts.
I'd go anywhere. How about a desert island?
Yeah, or like maybe London.
Or Bali.
Yeah, maybe Australia.
When do you have to be back in Palo Alto?
I gotta be back on the 26th. You know what I could do? Maybe I could work some overtime and get off early. And before the summer's over, we could go to Hawaii.
Or Africa.
I mean, they're never going to Africa. They're not going to get courier tickets. But isn't that something you do at the beginning of a relationship? And maybe I'm personalizing this too much because I started dating my now husband in March of my senior year of college. But I totally remember this collective daydreaming about all the possibilities that were open to us. And the chemistry between Carrie Russell and Scott Speedman is outstanding. Like, it's just, I mean, I know they dated in real life and I know she's with Matthew Reese now, and but I kind of am still sad that they're not together. Anyway, sidebar. A few scenes later, most of the female members of the cast are gathered on the steps of some building, and Felicity's friends are still trying to get the scoop about what exactly happened between Ben and Felicity, while also sharing their own love life drama in our next clip.
So come on, give us some dish.
Did you have sex or not? Yes or no?
No, we didn't have sex. What a waste. We're just taking our time.
See, but you could have sex. See, that's the difference. You could have sex and don't. I can't have sex and would.
I think Sean's cute.
Oh,
what do I know? After that whole thing with Greg, I'm in the mood for anyone.
Yeah, so is Julie.
What?
If you like Noel, why are you going out with Sean?
I like Sean, too. He makes me laugh. And I couldn't say no when he asked me out.
But you can't do that to him. You're going to break his heart.
I don't want to break his heart. And maybe it'll work out. Maybe we'll just have a really good time.
Yeah. I think Sean's cute.
I love Megan so much. So this felt like a real conversation to me. And I also just enjoyed that feeling of hanging out with your friends outside somewhere, nowhere to be for a while, talking about your lives, giving your opinions on each other's love lives. Also brought back college for me. So next, Ben and Felicity have to go to work at Dean and DeLuca for their boss, Javier, and they can't keep their hands off each other. And Javier busts them, making out in the back room, and we get our next clip.
Oh my God, you're kissing! You really were? I'm like your Cupid.
Javier, it's not that big a deal.
Oh, okay, whatever, tough guy. Now, I have something very important and very personal to talk to you and ask you. As you may know, I am getting married next week.
So Samuel and I got a little gift for you.
You got a gift for me?
Aww.
Yes, we're giving it to all our ushers.
Your ushers?
Yes, we would like you to usher for us.
Yeah.
Okay, you're too slow. It's a watch, just like this one.
Oh.
It's motion sensitive. You have to wind it like this.
Okay. Thanks, I got it.
And Felicity, I would like you to be my best man.
Are you serious?
Cool.
I'm so flat. Yeah, of course.
Oh, but, good. Oh, I didn't know what you were going to say. Oh. Now I have the best looking, best man in the history of the world.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now go back to work, okay? And please, no more kissing, because they can see you from outside, okay? Thank you.
Okay, that clip didn't really ring true to college experience for me, but I just love Javier so much, I had to include it. And especially at the time, I hadn't seen Ian Gomez in anything else. Obviously, since then, I've seen him in many things. And it just makes his performance as Javier that much more impressive to me because he's so not like that in real life. So anyway, she realizes she's never going to study if she's around Ben, so they agree to spend some time apart. But Ben wants to make a romantic gesture once he discovers that Felicity might take a prestigious art internship and stay in New York for the summer, and the new couple won't have the summer together they've been dreaming of. So Ben gets a hotel room, Felicity joins him for a makeout sesh before her last final, and the watch that Javier gave to Ben in that last clip stops because apparently Ben didn't make the shaking motion necessary to wind it. So Felicity misses her final and screws up her chance at her internship. And this also felt like college to me because this happened to me. Well, I wish I missed a final for an exciting reason, like a makeout sesh, but it was actually just because I stayed up all night studying and then like drank a Mountain Dew and thought I would wake up on time, and I slept through the first hour of my final. But even if you've never missed a final, you've probably had a nightmare about it, so you can relate. So after all the moments that reminded me of college, we finally get to the moment that convinced me that Ben was all in. While Felicity takes a shower, Ben goes through some serious machinations to track down Felicity's art professor. He finds her, eating dinner in a restaurant, and we get our final clip.
Professor Morton?
Yes?
Excuse me. I'm real sorry to bother you. My name's Ben Covington, and I'm a student over at the college. I tried calling a bunch of people trying to find your number and finally got a hold of your daughter and told me you were here, so.
What's the problem?
It's Felicity Porter. She's in one of your classes.
I know Felicity.
Yeah. Listen, it's totally my fault she missed her final today. You see, we just started dating. Do you have a second? Do you have 1 second?
Sure.
Okay, thanks. You see, we were fooling around and we totally lost track of time. See, I was wearing this watch that I got from being an usher. My gay boss is getting married. It's actually Felicity's gay boss, too. But you know what? It doesn't matter that he's gay. It doesn't matter at all. He's getting married. So this watch, if you want to wind it up, you got to go like this, which I didn't do. I got so caught up in the moment, and so did Felicity, that time just kind of shot by, you know? I mean, you know what that's like, right? When you first start dating somebody and everything tastes better and everything looks better and time just kind of flies by. I mean, maybe that's what it was like when you two first met.
James is my brother.
Oh. Hey, James. Look, she's real interested in this internship you told her about. And just had to come by here and make sure that I did whatever I could to make sure she still had a shot at it. So this is my shot.
I see.
So that might be more words than Ben has said in this entire series cumulatively, just in that one speech. And who could resist that charming bastard? I mean, you guys don't have the visual, so you didn't see it. But I was convinced he did that for Felicity, even knowing it would probably lead to her staying in New York for the summer away from him. Ben finally made a mature and selfless decision based on what was best for Felicity, because he loves her. And that's what got me on board with the Ben-Felicity relationship. So because it's a great episode of a great show, because it captured so much of the college experience, and because it was a huge turning point in the relationship between Felicity and Ben, I submit Felicity Season 2, Episode 22, Final Answer to the canon. Thank you.
Excellent presentation. As the official permanent Felicity historian of this panel, I will begin. This is really everything that makes Felicity great, and some of the things that make Felicity a... like kind of a time capsule. Like there's a Cosmo reference. Dara, remember Cosmo? Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, I'm just going to Cosmo it. And while he's drinking a clearly Canadian, he makes this reference. So many tube tops, so many giant cell phones. Ruby, I'm not sure what actually happened with that character. I feel like it didn't work out the way it was supposed to for whatever reason. But Like, it's probably best that she didn't stick around, but I really liked her, and I liked her and Noel together. I'm glad we got a little Richard Code. He is definitely one of the all-time great tertiary character deployments in TV history. Noel on Beet Powder is a callback to Bar None, my favorite scene of the entire series, which is captioned while he's screaming at them in the quiet reading room. And that last clip that you asked for, Kim, I love Ben's speech here, even though the characterization of Ben often seemed to depend on you can't show a happy couple on what's basically a late teen drama. So they would have him get cold feet or be obsessed with his schoolwork or cheat on Felicity or spoiler, whatever. So his characterization was often very inconsistent, but I felt like this was the most sincere and organic evolution of Ben. And this speech is it's a little out of character for him. Like you said, this is the most he's ever talked total. But he really sells it. Speedy is so charming. And just that bit with hey, James, kills me every time. It's so funny. This is a very typical Felicity episode. And this is, I think, the only show that ever quite got college, even though it cheated a little by putting it in New York and making it NYU. It's it really got it. And it really does bring me back to that time. And especially trying to focus on finals when whatever interpersonal drama was happening. So excellent presentation, excellent episode. I also continued watching to the end, because that one scene where they're everybody knows that you were just everybody knows that you were just fucking during the rehearsal.
Yeah.
Oh, good times. Great episode. Thanks for bringing it to us, Tara.
Side note, with the clip that you were playing where the girls were on the stairs discussing who can have sex with whom, all of them, their outfits are the 90s-est. Fucking 90s. Lena in her tube top and giant pants, those jeans, that whole head-to-toe look could walk right into a TLC video anytime. it's perfect. But I have to speak up about the fucking watch, because I had a watch like that where it would wind itself but it wasn't from you jerking your arm like you were in the dog pound like Javier showed him. It was just from your moving your hand in the normal course of events of being awake.
It's kinetic.
Yeah. So, a watch like that would be completely useless if you took it off and then left it sitting there for, an hour and a half, as happens in the episode, because what use would that be to you the next morning if it's going to stop itself that fast? So I realized this is ridiculous, but at the same time, I found it extremely stressful to watch that whole part, because it's so avoidable, particularly since when they finally figured out that it hasn't been 10 after 4 for the past 2 hours. There's a fucking alarm clock directly next to the watch on the nightstand at the hotel. Why do you do this to me? It was just torture for me to watch it. I realize this was...
Well, and also, while we're up.
Yeah.
What fucking college students are in a hotel and are just going to second base for two hours? Just fuck, take a nap and go take the test.
Or don't. If your test is in less than an hour... Polisher like me, it was very hard to watch. But you're right that they do rescue it with Ben making this gesture, and everything about that is cute. Sarah's so right that the James, it's the improvisational feel of scenes like that, or just even tiny moments within scenes, is what made this show so good and so different from other more carefully, mimetishly scripted shows, Dawson's Creek, and Superior, and why it holds up better now, I think, than other shows like that. But yes, excellent presentation. You're right. This is everything that makes the show good. So well done, even though I was screaming while we watched it. Dave.
I guess the nutshell is I don't really care for this show, and this episode wasn't so amazingly great that it changed my mind on that. So, we all know Kim Reed's very selfish canon mode, And, you know, that's what you get sometimes.
It's self-protection. Yeah. Self-protection.
All right. So with that, let's put it to a vote. I'm going to say no, Tara.
Yay.
Sarah.
Yay.
All right, that means Felicity, Season 2, Episode 22, Final Answer. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
I have discovered that since we did that citation needed clip origin run,
yeah,
that a surprising number of people thought it was either Tara or Sarah or both you doing the yup and the nope,
nope.
There. No. Yeah. Nope. So that was cute. Tara has our winner.
Yeah. Winner is Ryan Seacrest, who has just been named the permanent co-host with Kelly Ripa on Live with Kelly and Ryan after a million weeks of guest hosts since Michael Strahan left to be on Good Morning America. I guess. I mean, I don't know necessarily that Ryan Seacrest needs another job, but I guess he had time to kill since the end of American Idol between all his producing the Kardashian shows. And I think he has a radio show, too. Whatever. I don't know. He's for some people. I don't know any of them. So happy for them and happy for Kelly because she's certainly gotten someone who will not outshine her. Sorry.
Loser of the week.
Loser of the week is revolutionary ladies of scripted entertainment as both rape avenger drama Sweet and Vicious on MTV and first lady player in Major League Baseball drama Pitch on Fox got canceled. As we recorded this yesterday. Yeah, I'm more irritated by Sweet and Vicious getting canceled than I am by Pitch. As we all know, I am that one person who was like, nope, about Pitch. You can read all about it on previously.tv. My condolences to people who did enjoy the show, but they kind of already had run out of plot, so it wouldn't have gotten any better. Now you have one perfect season.
As I said on Twitter, I didn't really care about the plot on Pitch. I just thought Mark Paul Gosselaar, who never did it for me before, was super foxy on that
same
show.
Word.
So
yeah.
I just wanted to see more of him playing that character. He could have spun off Care About Jenny one way or the other.
I don't necessarily need him playing that character as long as he goes on another show where he sits in a lot of ice baths in metal tubs.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And wears tight pants. Yes. Done. Maybe, greenlit.
Maybe
go.
He can be beard buddies with Justin Theroux.
Fine with that too.
Yeah.
No problem with any of
beard
that.
Buddies. I don't know exactly what that means, but that's the thing now. Beard buddies.
Yeah.
Speaking about buddies, you know what time it is? What? Beard game buddy? Time? Huh? What? I'm so confused. I added so many clips to this and I don't know where anything is anymore.
Uh-oh.
This is the seventh game time of the season. Season scores currently are Tara 4 within 1 point of the season victory. Sarah has one. Value guests have one. Today we are playing This Is the End from game time regular John Potts, who earns himself an extra credit. Redeemable
Potsy.
For an extra hot grainy mini topic of his choosing. He writes, death comes to everyone, and on TV, it can be memorable. Can you recognize what shows the following deaths occurred on? 2 points if you get it from just a description. 1 point if we need the character's name as a hint. All right. All shows are live action, not cartoons, so are there no Kenny McCormick deaths from South Park in this list?
Roger that.
Make sense?
Yes.
All right.
Yep.
Let's throw it to Picky.
We will start with valued guest.
Okay, so our order is going to be Kim, Sarah, Tara. We've got 45 questions today. Are we ready to play? This is the end.
Yes.
Here we go. Kim. Drowned in a vat of taffy. Can you name the show for 2 points? If you need a hint, I'll tell you the character who died.
Yeah, I'll take the hint.
Billy Balsam.
Oh, that's not what I was thinking. Parks and Recreation?
Is it Boardwalk Empire?
No, it's not.
But that would be logical, right?
Yeah, Saltwater Taffy? No, I totally get it. I'm laughing at the connections made there. That was Pushing Daisies.
Pushing Daisies. Correct answer for any Pushing Daisies.
Sorry, Pushing Daisies fans. Sorry, Daisy Heads. What are they called? Dies of a heart attack minutes after getting elected vice president.
After getting elected vice president.
Yeah.
If we guess, are we done?
Yes.
If we guess wrong?
That's right.
Okay. Vice president. Hint, please.
Leo McGarry.
Oh, Christ. I was going to guess that. The West Wing.
All right, let's go for 1 point. Here, Tara, is your first question.
Okay.
Petrified by exposure to an alien chemical.
The X-Files?
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
No.
Yeah, you're in the right ballpark. All right, back to Kim. Crushed by a falling toilet seat.
Hint.
Georgia Lass.
Nah. Seinfeld?
6 feet under?
Dead Like Me.
Oh,
Dead Like Me. OD'd on nitrous oxide, then dismembered.
Hint.
Elizabeth Short is the character. OD'd on nitrous oxide, and then dismembered.
And then dismembered?
Yes.
Elizabeth Short. Okay, well, that's the Black Dahlia, but I don't get it. L.A. Noire?
Tara, do you know this? I know you watch this show. This is American
Horror
Story. Is it
American Horror Story?
Yes.
Oh, sure.
Chloe whatever, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was the Black Dahlia. Right. Whoops, all right.
Salami sliced. That's a verb. Uh-huh. Salami sliced and displayed in several museum-quality displays.
I mean, it wouldn't be American Horror Story twice back-to-back. Hint.
Beverly Katz. K-A-T-Z. Or, for our American friends, Z.
Is this Hannibal?
That's good for 1 point.
Nice.
Left as a frozen statue standing in a park.
Hint, please.
Carletta Peretti.
These hints are not helping me at all.
Some of these characters are main, you know, cast. Some are not. These are just memorable deaths, not necessarily of you know, key players.
Yeah. Left is a frozen statue in a park.
Mm-hmm.
Northern Exposure.
Good guess.
I like that guess.
CSI.
Oh, CSI. Course, sure. Yeah.
The original. Zapped by an oil slick alien. Zapped by an oil slick alien.
X-Files.
Oh!
What?
No. Any other guesses?
No.
Really famous one.
I thought it was X-Files.
Tasha Yar.
Oh, right.
Star Trek Next Generation.
Right.
Nerds.
Turned into pink mist after trying and failing to defuse a homemade bazooka.
And...
Okay, this is weird. I've never watched this show. I've seen 2 seconds of the show. It was this, and I've never forgotten it.
Okay.
Dylan Young.
Turned into pink mist while failing to disable?
Defuse a homemade bazooka.
Oh, God.
That's Grey's Anatomy.
Oh.
Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, Kyle Chandler.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Yeah. Because I always wanted, I missed the boat because I saw it too late, but I wanted to do a operation style shirt with the bazooka that they had to take out because it was in somebody, right?
Yeah.
Eaten by his girlfriend when it turned out she, not he, was a werewolf.
All right. How about, I'm going to go for it. True Blood?
How is that not right?
Once Upon a Time.
Oh, God.
Ugh. All right. Have we had a 2.1 yet?
No.
We haven't. All right. Here's our first 2-pointer. Fell down an open elevator shaft.
Thank you, Picky. L.A. Law.
2 points.
Good job, Sam.
Here's our second two-pointer. Uh-huh. Crushed by a falling helicopter.
ER.
Correct. All right. Here's one that's probably not going to be a two-pointer. Tethered to a weather balloon until it deflated.
Tethered to a weather balloon
yep.
until it deflated.
Yep.
Hint, please.
Ronald Danzer.
Oh, good old Ronnie.
Yeah. Ronnie D.
You know, that show with the weather balloons?
Yep.
WKRP in Cincinnati.
That's Gotham. That's Gotham. All right. Sacrificed himself by piloting a nuclear bomb into the desert.
24?
Yeah.
Yes. And God, bring us into our first score break.
Yep.
And this, you should get this one too.
Okay.
Keyword in this description.
Should.
Thrown out of an airlock, though it didn't stick.
Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah. Airlocks, death, Battlestar Galactica. Yep. Gotta be Rosalind Airlock. All right. Let's hear the scores at our one-third mark.
Well, Kim is looking to get on the board, and Sarah and I are tied with 5 each.
All right, Kim, you know what that means, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
It's time for the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge.
Good luck, Kim.
Get 3 of these 6 mid-80s Trivial Pursuit questions about TV right, and you'll get 2 points. Are you ready?
Okay. Yes.
What war did Jim Rockford serve in?
Cool. Korea?
Right. Nice. Which Rolling Stone was axed from a Saturday Night Live skit because he couldn't remember his only line? Take a guess.
Keith Richards?
Yeah, of course.
Nice.
What show's paramedics belong to Squad 51 of the Los Angeles County Fire Department?
Emergency?
All right.
Holy shit.
She did it! If that was the fastest ever.
Hang on a sec. We need to have a new rule here. If you run it, you get 5 points, okay?
I think that's fair.
All right.
I totally agree.
No pressure.
Yes, Dynasty.
No pressure. You already got your 2. You got the standard 2. Now, here's the new wrinkle.
Yeah, all right.
Sweep for 5.
Okay.
What soap has featured such youthful characters as Snapper, Brock, Lance, and Brad?
Guiding Light.
That was the Young and the Restless. Oh, let's play it out. What are the most frequently passed up prizes on game shows?
That seems like a broad question. Frequently passed up prizes on game shows?
Yeah.
I don't know. Cars?
Trips.
That's what I would have guessed.
Trips.
Sure.
What button does
furniture.
Michael...
Who needs a dinette set?
I was like, Rice-A-Roni? I mean, it could be anything.
We press on nails.
I'll skip the Rice-A-Roni. You cannot. What button does Michael Knight push when he wants to send Kit airborne?
I'm sorry, Sarah. I don't know this one. I'm going to say he presses
either.
The fly button.
You would think. Want to take a guess, Sarah?
Like elevator?
No.
Something?
No. Turbo boost is what sends him up
in the
air.
Turbo boost.
Yeah. Okay. So
the Nas button.
Kim's on the board with 2, though.
Yeah.
Well done.
Good job, Kim.
All right. Back to the game. Poisoned when her sweetener was laced with ricin.
Is that me?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. That's Breaking Bad.
It is Breaking Bad. Correct.
Sure is.
Number 17.
Spread Eagle.
On the run from the cops after causing several deaths, he dies falling through the ice.
Several deaths. Oh my god, I so want to say Colin Robbins, but it is not. Hint, please.
Lester Nygaard.
Fargo.
Nygaard from Fargo.
An actually decent hint for once.
Eaten by his, and in brackets, possessed students. Eaten by his possessed students.
Hint.
Principal Bob Flutie.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Correct for 1 point. There we go. All right, here's your Hardcastle question. Crowned with a pot of molten gold.
That's Game of Thrones.
It is Game of Thrones, and it's good for 2 points.
Better be.
Seriously.
Trapped in a suburban home where every day a demon rips out his heart.
Every day a demon rips out his heart.
Sounds like Thorold South, am I right?
Boom.
I was going to say, Degrassi, just kidding, hint.
Lindsay McDonald. Lindsay McDonald.
Very Canadian sounding name.
Angel.
Hey, yep. Nice.
Dies of kidney failure following a transplant from a patient who died of rabies.
Are shows in here more than once?
I think so, yes. I think I saw one that repeated.
Grey's Anatomy. Shit.
Nope. I'm no Superman, Tara. That answer is Scrubs.
Oh, sure.
Remember the Scrubs one?
Yeah.
Remember that one with
yes!
the death?
Move on.
Where somebody died in the hospital?
Yes.
Chained to a urinal in a building that was then demolished. Desmolished. That's what I was about to say.
Dismashed.
Yeah. Let me read that again for you.
Hint, please.
Chained
hint,
please. To a urinal in a building that was then demolished. You want the hint I heard?
Yes, please.
Eduardo Thumper, something or other. Orozco? Sure. O-R-O-Z-C-O. I think Thumper is the part that I'm going to guess makes.
Yeah, still weeds.
I like that guess.
Sarah, any guesses here?
I believe this is Veronica Mars.
It is Veronica Mars, but you don't get any points for that.
Oh.
Pushed out of a window, dressed as the superhero Captain Fallout.
Hint.
Alex Baker.
Captain Ford.
Yeah, this is a tough one.
It's Baker. I don't know. Chuck.
Incorrect. I'll
I was
going to
say psych.
The theme to this show used to be a ringtone I've recently discovered.
Oh.
It's Hawaii Five-0.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Pushed. I assume the new one. Pushed into cardiac arrest after his pacemaker was remotely hacked. Oh my God. Yeah, right.
This is Homeland?
Yeah.
Okay.
God, remember that?
That was a bad one.
Shot by his sons, along with his wife and daughter, when he discovered they were Soviet spies.
Can you repeat that?
Shot by his son, along with his wife and daughter, when he discovered they were Soviet spies.
Hint, please.
Okay, this is in quote, Emmett Connors.
The Americans?
That's good for a point. Tour
total
of
guess.
Duty ended and the plane take him home got shot down.
A classic.
MASH.
Good for 2 points.
Right.
After surviving a rifle shot thanks to a bulletproof vest, she was then sniped between the eyes.
Hint?
Caitlin Todd.
24.
No, she was killed navally.
Oh.
N-C-I-S.
Oh, dear.
Hit by a bus, saving somebody else. Well, that could be. That's a lot of stuff. Boy.
That's Grey's Anatomy.
It is Grey's Anatomy.
Nice.
Found dead in a bath of blood with her baby looking on.
Oh, sure.
Found dead in a bath of blood with her baby looking on.
Well, I said bath of blood, but yes.
Yes, yes, you did say that, but I'm still going to need a hint.
Rita Morgan.
Yep.
Oh, sure, Dexter.
Good for 1 point. Bring us into our second score break. Thrown through a wall by a demon, dying for good this time.
Is this Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
Nope.
Okay.
In that area, though, it's Charmed. That was Prue from Charmed.
Sure.
Oh, poor Brenda.
All right. I have 8 points. Kim has 9 points. Sarah has 10 points. Very close game.
So that means, Tara, you're taking the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
What were the three original series making up the NBC mystery movie?
Oh, God.
You're never going to get this, but
Columbo?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Mrs. Columbo?
But there is a wife in the answer.
Oh, Scarecrow and Mrs. King?
No.
Oh.
McMillan and wife.
Oh, right.
And McLeod.
Oh, Scarecrow and Mrs. King. That was much later.
Columbo was the only non-Scottish mystery movie of those three. All right. What do Laverne and Shirley call Andrew Squigman?
Squiggy?
What sitcom took its name from a Saturday evening post cartoon about a maid?
Hazel?
Whoa. What?
Jeez.
How do you know that?
I know things.
Okay. What TV frontiersman has a faithful wife named Rebecca?
Someone Cartwright?
Daniel Boone. All right. You need one of these last two.
Yeah.
What duo's program was the Captain and Tennille show said to be ABC's answer to?
Sonny and Cher?
Correct.
Yay.
Nice.
What was the Christian Broadcasting Network's 1981 Soap with Hope?
Oh my God, that was a real thing? I have no idea, but I have to find out if the show is on YouTube and watch every episode.
All right, the Christian Broadcast Network's 1981 Soap with Hope was called Another Life.
Oh, I'm looking up that thing immediately after this record.
Oh, man. Here we go.
All right. Here's our last 15 questions.
Okay.
It's a very close game.
Yep.
Shot in the forehead by a genetically created doppelganger to get close to her flatmate.
Flatmate is deceptive.
That's me.
Well, yeah. How would you change it then?
Apartment roommate.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, this person's British. So
okay.
There you go.
All right.
Yep. So we'll say that roommate then.
Hint, please.
All right. Francie Calfo.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah.
That one.
Alias.
Correct.
Duh. I was thinking like Orphan Black for some reason, and that just took me in the wrong direction.
That's why I said flatmate made it seem like it was British. That's why
I caught another British. I think he said torch. Oh no, he said fell down a
lift shaft.
Yeah,
awesome. Oh, Potsy.
Impaled by her niece's adopted sister.
Impaled by her niece's adopted sister.
Yes.
Hint.
Astra.
The Jetsons. I
don't know. That's some dark shit for the Jetsons.
That is Supergirl.
Oh. Okay. Yeah.
Here's a two-pointer.
Uh-huh.
Left paralyzed by a spider bite, they were prematurely buried alive, and no one cared.
Lost. So true.
Having finally, in all caps, finally found the German Luger he always wanted, it goes off in his pocket and kills him.
Hint, please.
Corporal Dan Hubler. The Hoob.
Oh, yeah.
Donnie Hoob.
I think you watched this show, Kim.
Yeah, it sounds familiar, but I just can't place it.
Is it Band of Brothers?
It is Band of Brothers, yes. All right, this feels like another two-pointer, guys. Pushed under a Washington subway train.
I believe that is House of Cards.
Blown up when the security protocols incinerated the CDC.
Oh, God. Walking Dead?
Yes.
Yeah. Nice.
Terrible finale to the first season. Mistook an escape shipment of helium-filled sex dolls for the Rapture and got run over.
Oh, sure.
Was that on 6 Feet Under?
It was. Yes, 2 points.
Yeah. I almost said The Leftovers.
Me too.
Apparently run over, but he was just in the shower.
Dallas.
Mind overloaded while trying to mentally store all the minds in the universe's biggest library.
Heroes?
That's River Song from Doctor Who.
Oh.
Spoiler.
Oh.
By the way, a few spoilers in this game time. Murdered by former vice president's chief of staff, but staged as a suicide.
Oh, wait. Can you say that? I missed the first part.
Murdered by former vice president's chief of staff, but staged as a suicide.
Scandal?
Yeah.
2 points.
I couldn't even tell you who it was, but I'm just like, it sounds like something they did probably.
Graydon Osborne. Dies having an apocalyptic vision after touching a future supervillain.
After touching a future supervillain.
Yes, that's right, Johnny Carson.
Future, shut up. Don't make me put this turban on. Hint.
Cassandra Carver.
Really?
Yeah.
Smallville.
Nice. I thought that was Heroes too.
All right.
I thought it was
this
Legion.
This is question 42 of 45, and we'll take us to our last score break.
Okay.
Impaled on the broken blade of a sword during a duel.
Hint.
Satoshi Takeda.
Star Trek?
That is Revenge.
Oh, God.
All right. Fucking guy.
Well, this is exciting. Kim and I are tied with 14 each. Sarah has 15.
14. So that means Kim gets it because you're leading in the scores. Kim, you're in.
Good luck, Kim.
I'm sorry, what were the scores again?
14, 14, 15.
All right. So, Kim, this could put you in the lead.
This could put you in the lead, Kim. Good luck.
Oh, da da da.
What reporter sub-anchored ABC's Son of Sam coverage in 1977 in jeans and a t-shirt? Of course.
Geraldo Rivera?
Yes.
Nice.
What flat-topped comedian hosted the variety show that briefly featured Alan Funt and his candid camera?
Henny Youngman? I have no idea.
Somebody named Gary Moore. Don't know who that is.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Who was the target of Frank Sinatra's full-page ad in Variety that read, "Dear Ed, you're sick, 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 sick"?
Ed Sullivan?
Whoa!
All right. Jeez. I think you're going to get this. Which of Davy and Goliath is the dog?
Goliath.
Davy.
Kim! Yeah.
Nice.
All right. How many seconds does a contestant have to get across the pitfall? A pitfall question. Awesome. Canadian game show Pitfall, hosted by Alex Trebek.
Dave's second favorite show of all time, after Almost Human.
What? How many seconds does a contestant have to get across the pitfall bridge? 30, 60, or 100?
Ooh, multiple choice.
60.
100. What two foreign languages can Fallon Carrington respond to her lovers in?
Ew. Horse Carrington.
What two languages?
Yes.
English and Moldavian?
No, both romance languages. Maybe that's why that was written that way. French and Italian. French and Italian. All right. This is very interesting. So our scores now, please, Tara.
Our scores now are I am in last place with 14. Sarah has 15. Kim has 16.
Nice. Lots of ways this could go, guys. Lots of ways this could go. Okay. So our first question is to Kim.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready? Killed
as I'll ever be.
When a helicopter dropped a piano on his head. And John Potts would like to remind you, no cartoons.
A helicopter dropped a piano. I'm going to need the hint, please.
Charlie Harper.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
Charlie Harper.
Show you probably heard tell of, but never watched.
Yeah. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh, good guess. Two and a half men.
Yeah. That's,
yeah.
Right. Teen's character. Okay. To
Harper
Sarah.
Valley PTA.
To Sarah, right?
Yeah.
Presumed drowned when his indestructible truck drove off a cliff.
Wait, is this a read?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Knight Rider?
Yeah. Can you please tell us the name of the character? that died this way?
That is Garth with an E at the end.
Garth Knight.
Garth.
All right, so Sarah wins, but let's play it out.
All right. Bled from eyes and ears when the hands of blue, in quotations, activated a sonic device.
Is this also Doctor Who?
No, it was Agent McGinnis from Firefly. Oh. From Firefly. All right, so...
Space!
Sarah
slips in at the end. We have two shits and giggles questions because I thought we might need two tiebreakers.
Okay.
Tripped on her heels and fell out the window she had opened in order to smoke.
That's Sex in the City.
Oh, that was Sex in the City.
Yeah, it was. All right, Tara got that one first. That's worth 4 day points, one for each of the characters in Sex in the City. Trapped in a Groundhog Day, in quotes, loop where he was shot, run over, crushed, and choked, among other things.
Benson.
It's not Benson. It's a show that started with the dawn of television and is still running on the CW now.
Supernatural.
Yes, it is indeed Supernatural. That is worth 2 day points.
Nice.
All right. So congratulations, Sarah.
Thank you.
Sarah.
Well,
good game, guys.
That was a nail biter.
That was great.
Very good. Thanks, Potsy.
Potsy. Well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We tuned into the series version of Dear White People before going around the dial with stops at Brooklyn 99, ER, and Bosch. Kim successfully pitched Felicity's final answer for the canon. We crowned winners and the losers of the week. And Sarah was the winner of this week's deadly game time. Remember.
Listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
Oh, hey, James.
Sarah D. Bunting.
So, this is my shot.
And Kim Reed.
I love Felicity in bed.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Does every American show revolve around fellatio-related cliffhangers?
Hey, it's in our Constitution.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.